And welcome to a new season of Frontline. My name is David Gill.
And I'm Andrew James.
And in this season, we are looking at a week in the life of a different guest every episode. So this new format basically is a guest will come on every episode. And prior to coming on, they're going to record a week in the life of their job. So it'll be Monday to Friday, usually. Again, not everyone, but usually that sort of Monday to Friday approach where every day for a few minutes, they're just going to record their reflections, how they find that week, good, bad, somewhere in between. And then we'll bring them in afterwards to have a bit of a discussion. So, Andrew, what's your thoughts about this and what's your thoughts about us mixing it up this year?
It really is a chance to get to know the guests a little bit more, have them put a little bit of their own personality and learn a bit more about them and what they do in a bit more depth, rather than what could seem potentially see a bit like a bit of a rush when we only had the guest slot. This gives people a bit more time and a bit more space to really really tell their story.
It's not to say that we won't do a year of this and then season three will be mixing things up even further as well. And you may have noticed if you do listen to this regularly that we threw in a bit of a special, the previous episode where we did a podcast version of the documentary we did. So we're trying to kind of mix it up as much as we can while still kind of staying faithful to our core aims and beliefs, I guess, of what we started this out for. So I guess with that in mind, then it's probably worth starting this episode off. So for this first episode, we have a clinical psychologist called Dr. Lisa Jane Keegan. So we will begin this episode with her reflections. So again, this is recorded over a Monday to Friday period, and this is her reflections on the week, good, bad, and bits in between. Enjoy.
It's Monday today. It's my first day of reflecting at the end of the day of what's been going on, how I'm feeling. Today has been all online clients. I was due to see a mixture, but unfortunately things happen in life. People cancel sessions. So I had both of my face-to-face clients cancelled. Lots of bugs going around because it is towards the end of November at the moment. So I've noticed that when I do see clients online, it feels a lot more intense in some ways, even though you're not face to face. I don't know if that's just because, for me, I really like to be active, moving my body. That's my way of releasing my stress. And Mondays, I don't take my children to school and preschool because my husband has the day off to look after them. So he does all of that. So if I don't do anything in the evening, it means I have a full day. I've just been sat on my bum, really. And I don't think I quite like that. also noticed today that even though every client is very different and presents with different problems, when you work with certain models, there often seems to be a theme. You may be looking at people who are really overwhelmed. So, for example, today we started looking with a couple of my clients at the DBT STOP acronym. And then I noticed, because I have now the pressure of trying to put social media feeds on for the business, that I ended up doing the STOP acronym after, trying to kind of like continue that theme. And it was making me wonder, do I need to reflect on this in supervision as in? Am I tailoring my work to each client, or am I fitting my client into my work, which I really hope not? And it's just made me think, is that a point to reflect on and something I'm going to have a think about, I think, in my supervision? So yeah, just after I'd done all my duties of getting children to bed, doing a bit of work, I should have really gone, done some yoga, some stretching, something that might have helped me kind of just move my body. But all I really wanted to do was sit on the sofa and eat yogurt and watch TV. So yeah, that was the limit of my night.
So today is day two. This is Tuesday. Once again, I noticed in the comedy, really, really busy day. I don't know if it's a combination of everything or work. It just seems very, very busy and I feel really tired. I did have to do another late night, which I don't usually do, but I recognise myself. I often work from a chemotherapy model, and I've very much noticed that two of my schemas can be self-sacrifice and unreliant standards, and that need to put clients before myself unfortunately does occur. So my thought process for a client who I didn't get to see today due to some problems was, well, the children are in bed, they're asleep, my husband's not back from working away, I might as well see her, it helps her. And also, I don't like the thought of not being able to support people. So, yeah, I ended up doing another lane, which I don't usually do. I am very much mindful now that I need to be quite a bit more strict and boundaried with myself, because I'm definitely feeling it. I feel incredibly tired tonight. Had a really good day today, though. I don't know what it is, and then I start to think, well, I'm the common denominator in this, so maybe this is me. But I've noticed clients go through cycles of having really challenging periods, and they all seem to do it at once. Once again, I don't know if this is just my perception of it and how I see it, because it makes me feel more drained and more tired than I perceive more of my clients really struggling and experiencing more difficulty, or if this is just, I don't know, a cycle of things related to kind of socioeconomic factors, such as everything that's happening with high interest rates, so putting more pressure on people, jobs, general times of the year. I'm very aware Christmas is coming up, and that can really throw certain people. And I have noticed a trend in my work that around Christmas things to get actually a little bit more quiet, but January is often a really busy time for me. So yeah, those are my reflections on today. Hi, so this actually technically isn't the end of my day, and I know this is slightly cheating. It's now Wednesday, but I tend to, if I can, if I'm not too busy, try to take every Wednesday morning, well, until 11 o'clock, as a me day, me morning, some time for self-care. If you are lucky enough to live in the Huddersfield HD8 area and you enjoy yoga, you might have been to Be Yoga Space. It's a hot yoga studio in Skelmersdorp, and I have to say, I try to go every Wednesday. It's usually Josie's class, who takes class, and it is amazing. It gives me that time just to bring myself back to the moment, to feel more grounded, to feel more present. And I must admit, I woke up with a really sore throat, a bit of a headache. I have the little old Lemsip, and I thought I was in half a mind not to go today, because I just thought the last thing I want to be doing is shoving my head between my legs when I've got a bit of a head cold. But after the Lemsip kind of perked me back up, and I thought, yep, I'm going to get on it. And it was the best decision I made. I really feel more energized, more grounded. I've noticed this morning I've got two anxieties because I've got some prep work to do for clients, and I hate leaving my prep work until the day of seeing clients, and I've got some things I need to do for tomorrow's clients. And now I just think, it'll be what it'll be. I'll do it. I will get it sorted. Could be a bit of a rush, might not be, but it'll be what it'll be. It just really allows me to detach from the noise in my head, those negative self-critical thoughts that I must admit I do struggle with quite a lot. and I just feel wonderful. It's the only way I can say it. So thank you, Jude.
So today is Wednesday. I've already done a bit of a sneaky one. I know I should do them at the end of the day, but I really wanted to reflect on my Wednesday morning. Following going to yoga, as I said before, I needed that, felt very relaxing. Unfortunately, my cold then did catch up with me. I was online with clients all afternoon as well. So that, as I said before, I think on Monday, this really quite draining for me. But one other thing that I did have, and it's something that clinical psychologists have to have, it's part of our code of practice, is supervision. And that's basically just to make sure that we are offering our clients the best service, looking at things from a variety of perspectives, and obviously looking at and reflecting on ourselves. And I found that really, really useful today, not just to reflect on clients, but just to reflect on my practice, what I bring to it, thinking about the challenges I have. One of the things I'm quite open to discuss is I have something, it's a schema called Unrelenting Standards, which means I constantly push myself. And just discussing that today and how that triggers for me elements of imposterism and inadequacy, not feeling good enough. And for me, that was really triggered by a recent referral I received, which alluded to the fact that their partner was a clinical psychologist. And instantly, that for me was like triggering of my unrelenting standards, that wow, if this guy sees me, he's going to think I'm useless. He's going to talk about his wife, and his wife is going to be there saying, why is she not doing this, why is she not doing that. So supervision was really, really useful to help me recognize how these thoughts were driving my feelings and connected to my, or vice versa, we don't know what comes first, feelings, thoughts, physical sensations, but how they were all connected and really overwhelming me. So that was really, really beneficial. I'm trying to think if there was much. I just think I'm feeling very tired because it's been a very, very busy week in our house. And I feel like that's been the theme of all these things so far, tiredness. And it is coming up to a break. I'm on what I'm calling, what's a research week next week. So I'm doing a lot of research for a online course I'm doing connected to self-esteem and confidence, possibly what I need to look at with my unrelenting standards schema. So I feel like I'm really ready for that as well. But tomorrow, I'm quite looking forward to it because I'm out and about a lot, which I really like. So yeah, I will speak to you tomorrow. So today is day 4. It's Thursday. This is actually my last day of work. Well, I say that, but one thing I've discovered when you work for yourself is that even though you can try to have the most strict boundaries, it doesn't work. I know that I will still end up replying to emails and making phone calls over the next few days. It doesn't just stop there. And then there's also the thought of, oh, I haven't done this, or I need to do that, so I'll end up going to do it. Might be able to hear traffic in the background, and that's because I'm making this note as I'm walking to go and collect my daughter. Once again, I think I definitely need to be more bounded with times and things like that. Another thing I have really noticed with, I guess I did this in the NHS, as I previously used to work for them before going fully private, but when you hold more of that risk and that responsibility with clients, when there's not many other either members of the team or services involved, you do think about it a lot more. And I notice that really impacts on me and kind of self-care. So when I'm feeling a bit rubbish is usually connected to when I'm taking a lot more stuff home with me. Really recognise that. And I have been quite a lot recently. And I don't think it helps that my partner is also kind of in the same area doing a similar sort of thing. So I notice that we often end up just talking about work and what's going on.
However, today, as I predicted, was different, and that's why I think I enjoy my days, because they can be so different. It's not that I dislike days when I'm seeing people online, not face to face and out and about. I just really do like the difference in my role. Also today, one of my sessions was a joint session with a physio, doing some pain management work with a client who's experienced significant trauma. Really enjoy varying it up. I've found that a lot. I don't have a specific clientele. I guess trauma maybe, but I have different kind of niche areas. So for example, I do a lot of work with a lot of professional athletes, but once again, I do tend to find that often those professional athletes have experienced a form of trauma, and that's why they're with me. So yeah, I have one area of kind of niche work with athletes, and then I have another area where I do more medical legal work, and that does tend to be, once again, people have experienced significant traumas. Some of that as well, another niche area of brain injuries connected to that and trauma. And then I have kind of other clients where I do a lot more work with women developing confidence and self-esteem. But then I also see a lot of men and a lot of people generally for low mood and anxiety. Another kind of, not really a bonus, but I suppose it's given me back some time, is that a client cancelled this afternoon. So I've been able to take some time out. I would love to say that that went to self-care or to doing something for me, but actually it was spent catching up on a lot of things. So yeah, I've been doing a lot of notes this afternoon, but it's been quite nice just to sit in the office and not have to kind of take things from people. I feel like often when I do therapy, you do take on board so much. I always talk to clients about it being like wearing a rucksack, and everything that you take from them is like an additional stone. That relates to stress, but you can also see it in the work I do. And we need to find ways to remove those stones, otherwise they will end up overwhelming us. And I sometimes feel like that's what happens to me when I don't have access to things that I use for self-care, such as running, exercise, those sorts of things.
Day 5 today, and as you'll hear, my voice has changed, and that's because I think I'm starting to get a bit of a cold. Not the best start to a weekend, even though, yes, it is a Friday and it's not the weekend yet, but I actually don't work on a Friday, so I have my daughter, my youngest daughter, instead. So I really look forward to my Fridays because it's a great opportunity to spend some time with her before she grows up and goes to school, and I don't get these opportunities anymore. I'm really trying to be grateful and be present. I have to say, I've found that quite hard recently just because of how busy I've been at work. I noticed that what I'll do is I'll just end up, I'll just reply to an email, or I just need to do this, or I just need to print that off. And then I feel really bad because then I realise she's either been on her own, just playing around, which I know she doesn't mind, but I'm still not being present. Or I've done the typical parent thing of, oh, just watch a bit of TV. I try to justify it in the fact of, oh, it's CBB, she's learning something else, blocks and blocks, which I know is still not the best. And please don't think I'm ever against TV, really not. I think it's valuable for children, for understanding and social connections. I just never want to be one of those parents who uses it for certain things. Also, I like to watch it with her, so then we can have talks about it and discuss it. So, yeah, particularly Bluey. Therefore, I think most parents love Bluey. It's a great show. no, excuse me. So, yeah, today I tried to make a conscious effort that this afternoon. So, we did watch TV together, but I realised that the weather has been appalling. I don't know. We've had the storm. I can't remember the name of it. So, I thought, right,
I'm going to part the mum guilt of watching a film together. I'm going to let her choose because she never gets to choose as well. She's the youngest, so her elder sister always determines what we end up watching usually. And she chose Finding Nemo. So I know we wouldn't get a full film because she's only three and she struggles with that attention span. So we just sat, we had hot chocolate, some marshmallows, which she absolutely loves. I just watched a bit of Finding Nemo, which she was in her element with. I noticed I had to be really conscious that I didn't pick up my phone. And in my personal life, me and my partner and my husband, we've been doing this on an evening, and the fact we've tried not to be on our phones because you're just not being present. And you're just spending your time, sometimes just mindlessly scrolling. And I have found this even harder recently because I'm trying my hardest, because social media, I'm not the biggest fan, but unfortunately it's a great way of promoting your stuff, engaging people, and also it's a good way to learn. So I've been trying to kind of post from the business something every day, and that often then runs into my evening, and then I feel guilty that I'm there on my phone and I should be spending more time with my partner, with my children. So that obviously then hits the guilt and you feel bad for that. But I think it's trying to find that balance. And even as a psychologist, and this is something that I discuss with people all the time, I just find it so difficult. It's so challenging to find that balance and boundaries as well, particularly working for myself, to have those boundaries with clients. And I know that that's something that I just need to keep thinking about and developing. But yeah, this is the last one of my reflections. Thank you.
And welcome back. And that was the week's reflections by our guest on this episode, Dr. Lisa Jane Keegan. So I've just introduced your name there, but feel free to tell us a bit about yourself, what it is you do, and how long you've been in your particular role.
Yeah, so as you said, I'm Lisa Keegan. I dropped the doctor. It always makes me feel uncomfortable. I predominantly work as an independent clinical psychologist, working with a variety of presentations, actually. One of the hats I wear is working with the English Institute of Sport and working as a clinical psychologist with a variety of different athletes who have clinical needs, shall we say, often trauma-based, as that seems to be the area that I predominantly do a lot of work in. I also do a lot of what we class medical legal work, working with solicitors and other teams of therapists for people who've experienced personal injuries, whatever that case, working predominantly on trauma, but also a bit of neurological challenges. And I work with people with trauma, anxiety, depression, and a recent focus of mine that I've been doing a lot of work on is self-esteem and confidence. Another side to my work is working with teams, working with services, looking at reflective practice, thinking about psychological input into those services. So more of a consultation role in that aspect.
Thank you for coming on, Lisa. And for those that perhaps have listened to some of our season one episodes, you may have recognised her voice. She was on a previous episode talking about staff wellbeing. So a bit more personal this time, talking about your week in reflection. So should we start with that? Talk about how you found that week and perhaps some of your reflections on your reflection, should we say?
Yeah, I think possibly need to disclose, because I know a lot of my reflections speak about my family and about some of the personal aspects. And I think might need to disclose that actually you are my other half. You are my husband, Dave.
I was trying to be really professional then, but yes I am.
So yeah, you might have heard that a lot of that is about yourself. Well, about our family, the challenges of being a family to two young, very young children, 5 and 3, and trying to fit alongside my role as a mum with work and general life and I guess for me, one of the things that I was really shocked by, when because I've listened back to them at a later date, is how much I complain about having no time. But time just seems to just drift away from me. And I always find myself kind of playing catch up. And I just always thought maybe that's my general coping style. Because if I think back to university and school and all those sorts of times when you've had to submit reports, things like that, I'm usually a last minute, so that's usually my case. But I am starting to wonder if I just, this is more connected to me, my personality and my ability to take on far too many things. And I also think that is obvious in my reflection I gave on what I do as a career as a psychologist. I do tend to wear a lot of hats.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think this is a bit odd because, as you say, there is, I'm feeling very BBC now, must be impartial. So I think
I have to disclose that I've known Andy as well for
all right, let's be full bombs, why not?
Quite a long time as well. Yeah. So
personally, I try not to think about it because it makes me feel my true age, and I don't like.
I was just going to say, yeah, a reflection of my age, and it's not a good idea. Yeah.
So I guess just my bit, and I think hand over to Andy for this next bit because I just think it's getting all a bit muddled up. But one of the reasons why we wanted the honesty and why perhaps we started with Lisa as our guest was because we're talking about something quite personal here. We thought we might as well do work with someone we know well, very well, but also to practice what I preach, really. You know, if we're going to talk about personal stuff and personal reflections, I can't expect others to do it if I'm not. Again, I'm. It's not even me though, is it? I'm making you do it, but yeah, you get the point. So, Andy, any questions to take the heat off me before I start digging myself into something here?
Something you regret later.
I was quite enjoying then watching you dig yourself a bigger hole, but I'll help move things on. Just a couple of questions, more general. First one's a more general question for definitions and terms, just for anyone out there listening, and also slightly for my own peace of mind as well. What is the difference, I guess, between a counsellor, a psychiatrist, and a psychologist?
Right. So, as a clinical psychologist, you undertake a very different training process to someone who is a counsellor. So, as a clinical psychologist, it's quite a really challenging journey to becoming qualified, really. And I've often heard lots of psychologists, and I'm sure my peers wouldn't mind me reflecting on this, of talking about there seems to be a huge rush to get through that process to becoming a clinical psychologist, getting on what we have to train as a doctorate. So we have to do a doctorate course, which is 3 years at university. But when you get there, you think, why have I rushed this so much? Why have I really wanted to get myself to this point? But you have to first start off with an undergraduate degree. So that's 3 years training. So I trained in psychology and criminology. I've worked in a variety of different settings just to get experience because I knew how tough it was to get on the doctorate. I think when I tried to get on, there was average around 15 to 18 places in about 7 universities up and down the country each year. So it was a really difficult thing to get on. And I remember people saying, you need to stand out because there are lots of people applying with undergraduate degrees, masters, some people even PhDs. You have to have something about you to be able to stand out and be picked because there's not a lot of difference between all these people applying. So I went and did my master's in research methods in psychology because I knew that was an area I actually quite struggled with. So I thought, right, let me go and address this before I get on the doctorate and I don't want to fail anything. And so I did a master's in that. I did quite a few jobs working as an assistant psychologist. And I guess that's where my interest in trauma started, as it was working with individuals with long-term complex psychological needs. So from then you do your doctorate, which is 3 years. You then qualify and you are unleashed upon the world as a clinical psychologist. As you train in a variety of different presentations with across the age range, a clinical psychologist can therefore work with just about any presentation. We are taught a variety of different psychological models. So we can work with CBT, cognitive analytical therapy, schema therapy, dialectical behavior therapy. I could go on and on. You learn so much from that perspective. You learn about neurological presentations, kind of developmental problems, personality disorder, so many different aspects. And from then on, what you tend to find with clinical psychologists is as they're years after and they've kind of got over their own trauma of the clinical training, they then go on to do specialize in certain areas. So as I said, my interest is very much in trauma. So I've trained as an EMDR therapist. I've done some systemic training, which is more linked kind of you would with child and family. But yeah, I do find it useful to think about the systems around clients, and particularly within my work as a psychologist with companies and with different businesses, it's useful to think about those sorts of things. Whereas a counsellor, now they are more trained in more reflection rather than kind of the psychological models that we're trained in. Coming on to the psychiatrist, which everyone always tends to get us mixed up, they're more focused on a medical model. There are, and once again, a lot of psychiatrists probably screaming at me now going, no, we do therapies, we look at everything holistically. And there are a lot of psychiatrists out there that do that. So you might come across a psychiatrist who's also trained in EMDR or another method of therapy, but predominantly they focus more on a medical model. So they train as doctors, then specialize in psychiatry and medical doctors, that is. And they do a lot of prescribing. So their role is a lot more prescribing medication and those sorts of aspects.
That brings me through, because I've had a few questions and a couple I wasn't sure if I was going to ask. But I think one, because you've mentioned it a couple of times, you mentioned it in your reflections for the week and also just then, about working with athletes with medical needs around trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got me thinking. When you're in that mode, when you're working in that situation, firstly, is there a fear from the athletes that you're working with of any sort of therapy that they undertake with you may put them at risk of losing their competitive edge? And if so, how do you deal with that?
Yes, that is a huge, and also a lot of athletes, the one thing I will say is a predominant, and obviously not all, but is that fear of being vulnerable, because their focus is on being elite, is on being the best. And vulnerability doesn't always fit for them with that. Even though I try to encourage them to see that vulnerability isn't a weakness, it can actually be a strength to recognize and to be able to sit with and appreciate that. Vulnerabilities for a lot of people, and I'm thinking about, I don't want to disclose a lot of the sports I work with, but some of them are quite physical sports, that's what I will say, and they really hate that fear of vulnerability. So when we're working together, they fear me liaising with people, so particularly their coaches, or I'm not a sports psychologist, so there is a difference between me as a clinical psychologist and a sports psychologist, but they fear that this will mean they'll lose their place on the team, or they'll lose their spot. So I do work with a lot of people who are currently in the Olympic cycle at the moment. And it is particularly one client I'm thinking with at the moment. She has really struggled with that vulnerability aspect and that fear of, if we are to go to certain places with our trauma work, how vulnerable that will leave her. And therefore, will she be able to perform? Will that have a negative impact on her? And it's taken a lot of work just to help her be comfortable with seeing that actually vulnerability can be positive. It can be really useful to explore this and maybe reframe it in certain ways to think about how she can use these vulnerabilities as a strength.
In your recordings, you mentioned undergoing yourself supervision.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often wondered how... Obviously, presumably, the person that you have supervision with will also have supervision as a psychologist. So how does it work? Is it a circular process, or is it like, in my head, it just like Russian dolls of people going through having clinical supervision?
Yeah, you're very right. So my supervisor will have a supervisor who will have a supervisor who will have a supervisor. It is part of the criteria, particularly. So as a clinical psychologist, we are all registered with someone called the Health Professionals Council, the HCPC, and to maintain that accreditation, which you need to work as a clinical psychologist, you have to attain certain standards, and part of that is supervision. So they do give guidance, and this is where I'm showing I don't really know how much it is, but I can quite happily disclose I have supervision once a month with my supervisor. She is a practicing clinical psychologist and EMDR practitioner as well, hence why that I work in those models. She's very specifically trauma-informed, and I see her every month, and it's invaluable. I know that as being a supervisor myself as well, particularly for, I would say, other professions, people get very anxious about supervision. I've noticed that. Psychologists, it's kind of embedded in you, and I think deep down we secretly look forward to it because we think, oh yes, it's a chance for us just to go bleh, and let everything out and discuss our clients confidentially, obviously, but get some feedback as to what we should look at, what we should focus on, should we think about things from other perspectives. And I mean, I'm quite happy to disclose I had supervision today, and we were talking about my own burnout, because I've noticed that I've really stepped up my individual therapy, and I've kind of lost track a little bit with my consultation work that I do. And I'm noticing I'm just feeling incredibly burnt out from just seeing client after client after client. And because I work with a lot of trauma, it's having quite a significant impact on me. And I noticed that today of how much I'm struggling with it. But yeah, so I have it once a month. I very much look forward to it and value it. But a lot of other professions, I'm thinking a lot of the nurses that I've worked with, a lot of frontline staff who are support workers, fear it. I think they fear that it's going to show something about them that might, once again, vulnerability, I think, comes into it. You are vulnerable sometimes if you're able to share things in supervision. I also think people fear that there's that element of imposterism that they're going to see that I'm not good enough. They're going to see that I'm not doing my job well. Whereas actually it's that reverse. It's that opportunity for you to seek support, that opportunity for you to get a fresh pair of eyes on everything. Because a lot of the time my supervisor will say to me, have you thought about this? Or have you looked at it from this perspective? And that is really invaluable, because often I can't speak for other psychologists, but I get stuck on a certain way of thinking. Like, for example, particularly a client might be a certain schema has been triggered, a schema being a way of coping, a blueprint for thinking about things. So I get stuck on that. And then my supervisor will say something completely different. And I'll think, oh yeah, why didn't I think about that? And that also for then triggers for me a bit of that. Well, why didn't I think about that? But then realizing not everyone thinks the same. It's useful to have that feedback. And that's why supervision is incredibly valuable.
One of the other points that came across in your reflections was that although you were doing a lot of online consultations, it really did seem like you have a bit more of a drive, a bit more love towards the face-to-face sessions with clients. What is it about the face-to-face sessions that makes them that much, I guess, appealing isn't the right word, but what gives it that extra sense in to you?
It's difficult because I've never worked online prior to COVID, which is what kind of encouraged me to work a lot more online. And I do value, don't get me wrong, I do value my online work. But I think for me, my face-to-face work, so different to other psychologists, and a lot of psychologists don't do this, but I think working independently and working medical legal, you tend to find that a lot more independent psychologists, I work in people's homes. I think as well, if I go back to my NHS days, I worked in crisis teams and on acute wards. So often in crisis teams, you would be seeing people in their homes once again. So I've become quite accustomed to that. Whereas I know a lot of other psychologists, a lot of my peers really don't like that. They like the structure, the safety of a clinic and having clients come to you. So I think for me, it's the difference going out to a client's home, seeing them in their own environment. They're usually, I was about to say they're a lot more relaxed, but then I've also noticed the reverse online, that because I'm not physically with someone, some people feel, I don't know, I, I guess reflections I've had, it's safer. They're contained in their own home and I'm not there. So, I mean, for me, it is that ability to go out there, see people in their home, see them a little bit more. I sometimes think relaxed. You do pick up on the same kind of, because I always insist on having video when I'm working with people online. But there's always, the only problem for me with online work is that those challenges with kind of, particularly if I'm doing EMDR, if the delay on the screen or something like that. And you can't see the entire body as well. So if you're thinking about how anxiety manifests in the body, I could just see the top part of them. And then underneath, their legs are shaking quite vigorously. And yet they seem to mask that anxiety and present really well. So there are those aspects to it. I don't know. I feel like I do enjoy it more. And I think it's because I get out and about, it creates some variety in my work. I don't want to do a disservice to online work as well, because I value that. And I know a lot that since obviously the restrictions have lifted with COVID, a lot of clients are going back to a lot more face-to-face work and are requesting that. But then I also find it gives you the opportunity to work with more people across the country. So like I said, the athletes I work with, I don't think any are local to me. Besides the ones who are in Sheffield at the Institute of Sport, most of my athletes are all over the country that I work with. And it gives people that opportunity to seek out therapy from different people, and also the convenience as well. So even though, yes, I do love it, I do value my online work as well. I just think it's the getting out that's what really motivates me with that work.
So earlier on, Lisa, you mentioned about the frontline maybe being a bit apprehensive about supervision and perhaps not looking forward to it, maybe even fearing it as well. So a lot of the work I do day to day is working with people on the frontline, people who work in mental health services, drug services, housing, homelessness, the frontline basically. And it's something I see as well. You know, sometimes that perhaps not putting the priority of supervision, reflective practice, clinical supervision, all the different support mechanisms that's available. From your perspective, what do you think services could do to maybe challenge that and maybe make supervision and reflection just embedded in the working culture?
I think there's something about demystifying what supervision is, so that people understand it a little bit more, understand the process that I guess you bring to it. You get out of it as much as you bring to it, as much as you can reflect on, or should we say more reflexive kind of practice. I also think there is a key part, which I hadn't mentioned before, about if you're thinking about services, is actually giving time, making it a protected time. Because as much as I've said people sometimes can be quite fearful, I'm also very mindful that sometimes staff members are crying out for it and are far too busy. So it goes by the wayside because it's seen as a privilege sometimes, I think. I think it's because we protect it so much in clinical psychology. And as throughout your career, it is such a huge part. And as I said, to be registered to the HCPC, the Health Professionals Council, you have to show that you engage in supervision. And I just think it's such an important process because I have developed in that line. Whereas I think back to working on acute wards, and a lot of the nursing staff were just, we don't have time for it. And the managers, the senior nurses weren't pushing for it because they needed that staff, those support workers, whoever they were, nurses, out on the floor, because services are so overwhelmed. So I think there's something about teams demystifying, explaining the process, having some protected time to be able to do it. And also for staff members to know, as I said, you get out of it what you put in. So if you don't want to tell people about things that you're really struggling with, you don't want to go in depth, that's if you are having clinical supervision about a client, then you can just talk about your challenges with it. You don't have to bring how it affects you. Although I would encourage that because you will get more from it, but it's definitely an important process. And I think as well, services need to think about the difference between clinical supervision and kind of that more general line manager kind of supervision that you get, rather than kind of just thinking about processes, actually thinking about the context of what they're doing.
So we're recording this at the end of 2023, and we're aware that everything is shifting and changing all the time. And I think including the fields that we work in. So for example, clinical psychology, I imagine that's on a constantly evolving journey. I guess just from my perspective, I guess, just what is it, where is it you see clinical psychology going in the next few years? What's the kind of direction? What's the hot topics, the debates about the world of clinical psychology then?
Well, I guess it's been moving in this way for a long time. It has been moving towards clinical psychologists becoming more consultants. So when I was in the NHS, there was a drive away from psychologists working more one-to-one with clients unless they were deemed to be quite complex. And there was a lot more push for PWP, CBT therapists and counsellors to be managing more of the kind of mild to moderate depression, those sorts of presentations, running psychoeducation groups, that sort of process. And clinical psychologists were then kind of pushed more into the more complex presentations, the more consultation with staff, thinking about how psychological services work within, let's say, for example, a diabetes service or a community mental health team. Psychologists were being pushed more. And that is kind of part of my drive as well, as why I left the NHS as well, to become more independent, because I wanted to be able to have more autonomy, less prescribed interventions with clients. So when I was working in the NHS, I could only see people for a maximum of 5 sessions in acute services, whereas I wanted to be able to work in certain ways and be able to do more individual therapy, the stuff that I really trained in psychology to do, rather than work more as a more of a manager, kind of a consultant, those sort of aspects. Don't get me wrong, I love my consultant aspect to my role. But I also think with, I guess, for me, and maybe this is just because of it being my interest and the way I see things, there is more of a push with holistic aspects, like coaching is becoming a huge thing. I know lots of psychologists that are training in psychological coaching and kind of moving more into that kind of those streams. I know a lot of psychologists who do now yoga for trauma, those sorts of things. So I feel like psychology is starting to branch out more. It's already starting to kind of reject the medical model. I would encourage anyone, if they wanted to look at that, Lucy Johnston's work on formulation and kind of moving away from using diagnoses to think about more systemic factors. But yeah, I feel like we've always kind of pushed against the medical model, but I feel it's becoming more of a factor. And like I said, I don't know if that's just because it's more of my interest, or it actually is. I think we're pushing more as well to be recognised. So clinical psychologist is a protected title. We want it to be a protected title, whereas a psychologist, anyone can call themselves a psychologist. And we want people to recognise the importance that, and due to the amount of training we do, the supervision, and everything's quite rigorous about what we have to go through to achieve this and to be able to work as a clinical psychologist. And I feel like there's a lot more people pushing to make that psychology more protected, those titles more protected, rather than anyone doing a short course and calling themselves a psychologist, because we've seen the damage that can actually happen from people who aren't qualified and spent all these years training, working with people. It can be really, really harmful to people if you're not working in certain ways. And that's why I would always encourage people, if you're seeking out psychological therapists, to seek out a clinical psychologist who is registered.
just for our listeners, if anyone else is interested in the world that you're in, any sort of top tips where to point people in the direction if people are fascinated with this subject, where they can learn more about what you do or perhaps some of the models you mentioned?
If you want to learn more about psychology, you can look at the British Psychological website, and that gives you a guidance about all the different variety of psychologists you can become, as I've already alluded to: counselling, coaching, forensics, sports, clinical, health. There are lots and lots of different kind of areas you can go into as a psychologist. You can also, outside of that, train in a model. So you have psychotherapists. We've not really mentioned psychotherapists who might train in psychotherapy. And you can go and train in psychotherapy, or you could go and train in. So, for example, one of the models I use, EMDR, you could be an EMDR therapist without being a clinical psychologist. You could also be schema is another therapist, another therapy I use, another model, psychological model. You could go and train in that. Cognitive behavioral therapy. You see a lot of people who are trained in cognitive behavioral therapy. So you could, if you didn't want to go down the extensive route I've done, you can go down other areas. But I would definitely recommend looking at the British Psychological Society, looking at all those different aspects, and just Google. And people say never Google, but Google like cognitive behavioral therapy, cognitive analytical therapy, schema therapy, DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, whatever it is that draws your interest, to learn a little bit more about them.
What was your main reflection from that week then, listening back and hearing that week again? What was your main takeaway from it?
I think, as I've kind of said already, there are aspects of, that I think I need to take some step back for me. I know you heard in my reflections that I went to yoga. So that is kind of it's hugely beneficial for me. It gives me that headspace. I like a very physical kind of workout from yoga as well. I do vinyasa or astanga, and it's a heated one, so I like that real physical aspect, and that really does help me alongside supervision to kind of decompress from everything that's going on and have some time for me. And I think that's very much what I heard in that yes, time is important and precious, but I need time for me just to be me and do what I need to do. Otherwise, I'm holding all this stuff from clients coming home with it. And obviously, I don't want to take it out on you and the kids. So I think I need that space. So that's just to find that I need to do more things for me.
No further questions, Your Honour. I do.
Did you enjoy the experience of actually having to sit and reflect through about how your week goes?
Yeah, I did actually. It was quite enjoyable. As I said, I learned a lot from it. I definitely learned a few things. And actually, quite interestingly, following that, I did actually reduce the amount of clients I was seeing, because I just thought, I'm pushing myself far too much. I don't think I've ever been busier. And I guess as well, I have to acknowledge the business side of my role, and that when you work for yourself, and if anyone does who's listening to this, there's always that drive to be constantly working, to be constantly doing, progressing your business. And I'm very mindful that it often is a bit of a, it sometimes sits quite uncomfortably with me, the work I do and the business that I kind of run. It doesn't feel to sit quite well. So having to take that step back obviously has financial implications, but it made me realize how much I do need to look after myself, because if I can't look after me, I can't work with other people, and then I'm not giving others the best version of me to support them.
I think on a very strong message of self-care, that's a very good place to leave it. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. It's been enjoyable.
Thank you very much. I'll see you in a minute.
See you in a bit.
So So that was episode one of the reflections of clinical psychologist Dr. Lisa Jane Keegan. So I guess at this stage, it'd be interested to ask and find out how you found that, David, given the world's colliding aspect of that for yourself.
Odd, I'll be honest. Let's just leave it as odd. Personal life, professional life, and I've, as someone who tends to not give too much away about myself, people who know me professional, I do think it's, I'm quite bounded when it comes to who I am personally. And I think, it's just a very weird, but good weird, you know, got to push yourself out of your comfort zone. I think it was, yeah. Interesting experience. Positive, interesting experience.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think lots of interesting points made, and lots of new information learned that I've never learned before, and a few things that I'm going to look into after we've finished recording, so I'll know a bit more about the background and some of those techniques and styles that Lisa was talking about. So for me personally, I found it quite an interesting experience. But I'd be very, very interested to know what the listeners think, if they found it interesting. As I always used to say on season one, that's what we think. Tell us what you think. And all that's left for me to say at this stage is I've been Andrew James.
I've been David Gill.
And this has been the Frontline Podcast Season 2.